It's time now for that informative issues and answers show, Greenwich Matters, where your host, Sam Romeo, will keep you up to date on the political scene in Greenwich, along with decisions made at the state and federal levels that impact Greenwich. And of course, he'll take your calls at 661-5051. That's 661-5051. And now, here is your host, Sam Romeo.
Well, good evening. It's going to be an abbreviated show this evening. So we're going to get right into this with Mark Betts and Rob Kennedy. And we have a special guest on the line we're going to bring in. And it's, what's the name of the
company? Laura Blau.
Yeah, but what's the name of her company, too?
Blue Path Design.
Okay. So we're going to bring her in right now. And we're going to talk about windows and design, I believe, climate.
Well, we're gonna talk a little bit about the balance between building a passive multi-unit structure and the historical integrities that are trying to be maintained. And Laura's gonna come in. She's got a project down in Philadelphia, down in that area. That's underway or that's been completed. They've got some tours going on for people that are interested in seeing.
And that's a pretty tough market down there, too.
Yeah.
So, Laura, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Mark, take it away.
So, Laura, you and I were talking a little bit before the show tonight and discussing this recent project. Why don't you give the listeners a little bit of a background on yourself before we get into that specific project?
Well, I'm an architect in Philadelphia, and in the last, since 2009, I've actually a little bit before that even, I've really been trying to concentrate on trying to learn best practices for serious, really low energy, not light green, but deep green building. And what it's drawn me to is building science and really learning, even though I went to the University of Pennsylvania, an excellent top-tier school, I didn't get the kind of building science education that I now know I need and architects all need in order to know how to design super low energy buildings. So my project, which is in the Rittenhouse Historic District of Philadelphia, very near to for Center City, Philadelphia, it's a, and my building is 175-year-old, 1845, four-story, four-unit apartment building. It actually was a single family up until the 20s, and that's when they converted it to a multifamily. It's a beautiful project, and we're going through the historic commission, and we're bumping into some limitations of knowledge and culture and the way people have been doing things and the new science and information that we now know, and, of course, the new urgency we have with climate change issues to try and figure out how to make historic buildings even more efficient than we have in the past. And we've mostly been accepting that we can only bring it so far because they're historic and we have lots of problems that we can't solve. But we actually know how to solve them. We have new products that allow us to solve them much more deeply. And that's what I have learned, and that's what I'm becoming an expert at.
Okay. So you're really analyzing the push and pull between the way a building looks and the way a building performs.
Yes. Well, the issues with historic buildings, particularly masonry buildings, is that you're limited with how much insulation you can put on the inside without starting to create a self-destructing wall because you leave the brick very cold and it starts to have freeze-thaw issues. But what we're learning now that we have more sophisticated modeling tools that allow us to study how moisture passes through that wall, and we have new very smart products, air barrier products that will let the moisture move in and out of that wall to allow that wall to dry out properly, that you can double the amount of insulation if you build it properly and design it properly. Now, and what that does is allow us to take these buildings and get them to near zero energy use.
Okay.
So it's pretty exciting information. So we're limited. So the front of my building, which is on Pine Street, a beautiful block, has really top quality hard brick. So the quality of the brick is real important to how moisture passes through it. The harder it is, the less moisture passes through it. So we do testing of that brick to see how porous it is.
Okay.
So our front brick is the top quality. Our back brick, this was a developer building. And just like developers today, they put their money on the front, mm-hmm. and then they kind of cut little corners on the back, and they put the cheapest stuff on the back.
So for our listeners out there, why don't we just tell them a little bit about why it's important, the idea of moisture being able to pass through the brick, you know, why that's not a good thing.
All right. Well, so one thing is that what happens when we start to condition a building with heating and air conditioning, which they didn't have 100 years ago, right, mm-hmm. is that we change the dynamics of that building. So old buildings are leaky, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people lived with a certain level of discomfort, right? And they sort of accepted that. And the buildings were so leaky that things dried out both sides of the wall because there wasn't hardly, there generally there was no insulation in my building, right?
Right.
So when you have a fireplace, right, and you have your fire, then it dries out from the inside, and the sun dries it out from the outside, and moisture can move back and forth, and it doesn't get trapped anywhere. When we start to condition a building with modern equipment, air conditioning and heating systems that keep much more of a constant temperature, water, which always wicks from wet to dry, is now drawn into the building, and it starts to condense on the inside of that wall of the brick, which you can't see because you have lath and plaster or another drywall in front of that, and you can't even see it. And now it's starting to deteriorate the inside face of your wall. So our hydrothermic models told us that, but it wasn't until we actually took the wall out that we proved it, because we saw the deterioration of these bricks on the inside of the wall. So in order to preserve this porous brick on the rear of our building, which is different from that really good quality hard brick on the front, is that we actually need to cover the brick from the outside, because it's just not good enough quality to take care of things. And when that moisture comes in, it also brings mold and mildew to the inside of your building. So on my third floor, tenant had mold sensitivity, and she had a expert come in to test her apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, she had mold, and I wasn't surprised, but I can't solve that indoor air quality for her unless I'm allowed to put an insulation on the outside and cover up that quote-unquote special historic brick with either a synthetic stucco rain screen system or some other kind of system on that outside wall that keeps that moisture from getting into that brick. The problem with our historic commissions right now is that they sort of consider all the historic brick equal. So that front facade, which is a special cultural facade that is really contributing to our sense of our historic connection, is quite different from my rear facade, which is on an alley street, which is mostly the butt ends of people's cars and their trash cans and doggy bags, right? So my contention is that I think we should be allowed to do an exterior insulation on this poor quality brick, porous brick in the back, to solve the durability issue, the indoor air quality issue, and to make it near zero energy use. So that will help the carbon footprint of this building and our environment as a whole.
So what type of resistance do you see from the Historical Society on issues like that?
Well, I want to say historical preservation and commissions are filled with really good quality people who have been very mission-driven. They have believed that their mission is upholding the Interior Secretary's guidelines, which were written in the 70s, and they're very important, and I don't want to discount that, right? I believe in much of those guidelines. I just want a new caveat added to them that a contributing, historically and culturally contributing facade, we need to honor every aspect of those guidelines. On a less contributing facade, like our rear alley, we should be a little bit more forgiving, and the result of being forgiving is that we improve the long-term durability of that building because the quality of that brick was not good the day it was put in, and covering it up is not a huge cultural loss. And the gain that we get, which is that we now have replaced the historic fabric that we've covered up with another good, which is improving our environment, improving the health and durability of the building, and actually, those things help maintain the fabric of that row of buildings on that neighborhood, because they won't have to be torn down, right? And they will continue to be cost-effective to run, where if we don't do this, they'll continue to have mold and mildew, they'll be very expensive to heat and cool, and pretty soon they'll start to fall into disrepair because people won't be able to afford to maintain them.
Great point. Absolutely. You and I discussed, we talked a little bit about the Historical Society, and I believe you're in Pennsylvania. So for the listeners up here in Connecticut, I wanted to introduce that legislature that you were discussing, and I have no idea whether it parallels anything that takes place here, but I thought it was important to mention.
Now, I know there's only 3 states in the union that have an environmental bill of rights, and I actually can't remember what the other 2 are, but Pennsylvania is one of them. And this was put into our Constitution in the 70s, about the same time as the guidelines were written. So it's sort of ironic that they have, that they're the same generation, but they actually don't interact with each other at this point. So the Environmental Bill of Rights basically says that every governmental agency needs to consider the environment, the health, and of the air, the water, our environment for every citizen, and as part of every decision that they make, right? And it's rarely even cited, right? Which is sort of ironic. So if right now the commission believes their mission is that they don't have to look at the environment, their mission, they have their sort of blinders on, or I don't want to be denigrated because they're really great people who have a great mission. But as with any commission, they have a set of rules that they go by, and they can't look at everything, right? So they say, this is what we look at.
Mm-hmm.
And they say the environmental and sustainability and all that stuff is not our issue, right? And what we're saying is actually it is, because our Constitution trumps guidelines, and you actually do have to consider these things together. And you have been doing things a certain way, and you've been thinking you're doing it right, like all of us have. I thought I was building the right way until I learned about a lot of these building science issues, until I learned about the products that allow us to do things differently. So there's only a few people who actually know this new knowledge and these hygrothermic models that we have now, tools that are so sophisticated that help us figure out what's happening to the walls of our building. This is new information. So mm-hmm. I don't want to be down on the commission, but I want to challenge people on historic commissions to accept the new science that we have, accept the new tools that help us figure buildings out, and understand that we actually are not preserving our buildings for the long haul if we don't do something about these porous brick walls and appropriately address them in a new way.
So I have a question for our host, Sam Romeo, who has an awful lot of experience with local government. Sam, does anything exist on the local level in Greenwich or maybe some of the surrounding communities that you know of that sort of parallels this idea of an environmental bill of rights?
I learned a lot here tonight, I have to tell you.
Listening to this, and knowing you, I'm thinking that
I'm this taking is, this all in. I mean, I'm really enjoying this. One of the best shows we had.
Well, just from the work that you know I'm aware of that you've tried to undertake with Greenwich, I when I heard this, I thought to myself, this sounds like something that Sam would like to get initiated on a widespread scale.
I'm very interested in this. I really am, and like I say, I really learned a lot here tonight. And then when you know I'm getting into this, especially with the HTC, our sort of district commission here in town, and they do a pretty good job, but there's no Bill of Rights that I heard here tonight that even comes near that.
So I thought, you know, what came to mind, and we've obviously had a variety of different shows, some of which I think one of the shows I think focused on a project that we were that's being undertaken here in Greenwich, and I know that in a town like Greenwich, maintaining the historical value is very important.
Yeah.
But also, there's this movement towards sustainability, and as Laura has mentioned now, it's very important.
This is a natural blend. I mean, if you really want to save a building and you're really serious, this is a real good fit.
Sure.
And we have historic districts in the town here that have designated that, so you can't even change the paint without getting approval in the district. But I don't think it goes this far or this well.
I was going to ask, what do you think about initiating the idea of having something like this Environmental Bill of Rights at a local level?
I think I could put my arms around this. I really do.
That would be exciting.
Yeah.
Let me talk about another thing that, in terms of retrofitting buildings, that I think is a paradigm shift in how we think about bringing a building to be more energy efficient. Sam Rashkin, who is from the Department of Energy, and he's the one who managed the Energy Star program, and more recently has been championing the Zero Energy Ready program for the Department of Energy. I saw him as a keynote speaker at two conferences that I was at, and one was in Chicago, the Passive House Conference, I think it was a year or two ago, and the other was the Energy Efficiency Building Conference, National Conference in Colorado that I was presenting a couple papers at myself, and he was the keynote speaker. In both of those sessions, he said, Energy Star is my baby, but guess what? Energy Star is not good enough. We need to be doing better. We will not meet our climate change challenges and mitigation if we just go to Energy Star. We have to do better, and Passive House is one of those paths to that deeper energy. And so when you're retrofitting a building where you have challenges, right, maybe you can't do anything, maybe you can't gut the whole building, right, but what you do, instead of thinking about, well, I only have X number of dollars, so I will do an even level of work on the whole building. So I can afford to change all my windows out to Energy Star windows. He said it's better if you say, look, I have this much money, and I can change two-thirds of my building to a Passive House level window, a really super efficient triple pane air-sealed window that's installed with air tightness as part of the installation package, right? That is better, and then later you can continue to bring that building to deeper in a phased kind of way. So instead of doing half measures in a sort of even paint, you do the absolute best you can with what you can do and the budget that you have. That's a real paradigm shift in how we think about the value proposition of how we approach an old building and when we have budget constraints or access constraints. So in my building, I have my third floor tenant, and that building I just put a kitchen in, and I can't really afford to tear out the whole kitchen and insulate all the walls in the kitchen. So I'm insulating other walls in the building that I have more easily access to. And I'm working with the Passive House Institute International with what's called an EnerFit step-by-step program, where I develop a master plan for the building. And I say, at this time, I can afford and I have access to this much of it, which I'm bringing as far as I can. And then, at some later date, I will implement a deeper level, right? And here's my master plan for 5 years from now, 10 years from now, where I can bring the building along to a deeper level. And what we want to make sure people don't do is do some half measure that then makes them say, well, I can't undo that. That would cost $1 million to undo that. So right. You kind of like make a roadblock to yourself to getting deeper. So going full bore, the full Monty, as they say, with whatever you do, and do that completely in certain areas, and know that if you can't do another area, you can do that at a later date, or someone else who buys the building from you or whatever can proceed, but you haven't put a roadblock in the way for taking that building to the next step.
Great point. I think we've had Steve Hall from Chandler on the show quite a few times. He's a project manager who sort of presented a very enlightening approach to a better way of building buildings through a collaborative effort. He has been a project manager for many, many years and has an architectural background, gets very much involved in green funding. And what he says is to bring everyone together, all the key players together in the beginning of a project rather than proceeding with the design and other elements, sit everybody down in the beginning and sort of analyze what is most important. And I think that speaks to the point that you're making about considering the most important changes and going at them 100% and doing them the right way, as opposed to sort of going at the whole project and doing a little bit here and a little bit there. I think that you're sort of making the same point in a different way.
So one of those things is that the way our construction industry works, particularly in the residential market, is that a homeowner says, oh my God, I have a leak in my roof. So they talk to a roofer, and the roofer says, oh, we'll do the X, right? Well, if they had talked to someone like me who could think holistically about how the roof connects to the wall, connects to this, connects to the skylight,
then
I might tell them to do something different. But they go ahead and do that. Well, I took care of the roof because it was leaking and I just did X. And it's like, oh, you could have done Y, and that would have solved 6 problems, but now we kind of can't go back and undo that, right? So, and that it could be a totally fine roofer, but they have their zone, right? So they talk to someone who does air sealing for basement crawl spaces.
Sure.
But they don't actually know how that connects to the wall. So what I can do, and what when you think holistically about the house as a whole system, is to say, look it, talk to me first, and then I'll set up this master plan for you so that when you get that spec for the roof, I can make sure that it connects the dots between how the roof relates to the wall, relates to that mold in that you have in that skylight, which is related to how the insulation is done in the roof, and sort of connect the dots and help you figure out, if you only have X number of dollars, this is what you should do now, so you don't preclude making that work with the next step.
Sure.
Whenever that happens.
Laura, we only have a couple of minutes left. I just wanted to mention the building and the tour and the involvement on the part of Sherry and some of the other people that are involved in that project. Would you like to just tell the audience a little bit about that?
So I'm the vice chair of the Philadelphia Passive House community, which is now was the Greater Philadelphia Passive House Association, which is now joining with the Delaware Valley Green Building Council. This is a really great thing that and the Living Building Challenge Group are all joining together and will be rebranding in this next year. So we are the Passive House Group provides tours of Passive House projects, and we have three multifamily tours. One that happened a week ago, which was a senior affordable housing project. Mine is the historic renovation, and then there's another multifamily by Onion Flats that's happening. So these three tours are happening. Mine is tomorrow afternoon from 4:30 to 6:30. And we're in mid-construction, so what you're going to see is a building on that's been, you know, mostly demoed, and you'll see different kinds of walls that have different kinds of air sealing approaches to them, with some liquid applied air barriers and some plaster applied air barriers, and then some fabric membrane barriers. And so you see how we start to connect the dots, cutting the edge of the floor away from the wall so we can bring an air barrier down and connect the room between rooms, and how we tape things up. And, you know, you'll see how this is done, and you'll see some Passive House windows installed. And
so Laura, I just we only have a minute. I just wanted to, yes, to make sure that we thank Sherry Rosen from Brownstein Group, who I know is an advertising partner on this tour, as well as Leah Wergau, who I think you work with. She's the education and engagement manager for DV.
Right. For the Delaware Valley Green Building Council.
Right,
yes.
Right.
We love our sponsors. They're really great. They really help us accomplish our goals. And so the Brownstein Group is one of those great sponsors.
Well, I want to say that this has been one of the more interesting shows. I really enjoyed this, and I learned a lot here this evening. So I want to thank you for coming on, and thank you, Mark, for finding her to bring her on here.
Sam, thanks so much. And Laura, before I let you go, why don't you let the listening audience know your website for Blue Path?
All right. So Blue Path is BLUPATH.US. I also now have Green Steps LLC that I just started. That's my construction firm that will concentrate on construction management, owner's rep, so I can help build teams to actually accomplish the job, so I can design the job with Blue Path, and I can help actually implement it with Green Steps.
Terrific, terrific.
Both women-owned, you know, we're small but mighty.
Okay.
And also you can go on to Greenview Building Products and look at some of the energy-efficient different systems that we have.
Yes,
great.
Absolutely.
Rob, thanks so much. And I want to thank Rob Kennedy for putting this together with Sherry. Did another wonderful job. And again, thanks to Herb Greenbaum, who always does a wonderful job with our press releases.
So, okay, with that, we're going to have to say good evening. And until next week, 661-5051. You've been listening to Sam Romeo on 1490 WGCH.